Evening, everyone. So I sent out the last four pages of Mitzvah Lamed Zayin, and I wrote out 11 numbers. Okay. So the topic is Shelo Lahaid B'Sheker Lo Sa'anev Re'acha Eid Shaker, not to bear false testimony. Okay, and most of the first shiur that we did last week is dedicated to the psulim in Eidus, right? What is considered a disqualification, and different types of testimony, whether testimony can be delivered in writing, right? And remind you that when it comes to a court case that is monetary in nature, there's quite a bit of leeway about how we can come to know the facts, right? Let me explain that if you have two litigants who are arguing a case and the both of them agree to stand before a judge, let's say that's related to one of them because the other one trusts him or whatever it may be, or to accept testimony from witnesses who might otherwise be disqualified, as long as the two litigants agree, there is a lot of leeway to accept some extra legal procedures that might not be normally be accepted if it was, let's say, a case involving a crime or a punishment, or malchus or even capital case or something of the sort. The testimony must come from a worthy source that has no psul, no disqualification, right? So as I said, it's because when it comes to monetary issues, we have a lot of leeway. We can do whatever two people agree. Give away your money if you want. You know, you can certainly accept the disqualified witness or even the judge, for that matter. Okay, so we're on the page Kuf Tzadik Tes. These are the four pages I sent out. And the first one is source number one. And source number one asks the question that when it comes to this let's say less than perfect testimony, rules of what is considered two kosher edim, there are some cases where we will allow even one witness, even though the Torah tells us so often, "Al pishnayim edim," only something is only considered to have happened if it was witnessed by two kosher witnesses. But there are some testimonies that are indeed allowed by one witness alone. Most common case of this is what's called edus isha. The testimony to prevent a woman from becoming an aguna, right? Okay, this is why the Gemara actually, after referring to those disgusting fights that take place in the Roman arenas, the Gemara says that Jews should try to attend these things, right? One, so that they can add their, I think it was like this, so that they can add their vote that the person should live. And two, if chas v'shalom, you know, the person who was just taken out by this lion or this gladiator was a Jew whose body was then thrown to the dogs, that that this Jew at the arena can testify for this poor man's wife that she can remarry. But if all the Jews avoid these arenas and these gladiator fights, if all the Jews avoid these places as they ought to, right, there will never be a Jew who can testify right, to the death of this man so that his wife can be married, right? Okay, but so comes the halacha to tell us that we don't need two witnesses for that. In some cases, we will even allow what's called mesiach lefitumo, you know, the testimony of a Gentile who's just saying, oh, yeah, yeah, I saw him being ripped apart by a lion in the arena. Yeah. Okay, his wife can be married. All right, so, but so here's the question asked in the section that I wrote, number one. If we're allowing women to testify in what's called Edus Isha, not because women are the witnesses, but because the testimony that this woman, this single woman, or these two women, right, the testimony that is being rendered by these two women, right, is something that is freeing a woman from being an aguna, from being tied to a man that is no longer alive. Well, if he's no longer alive, she's a widow and she can remarry. Yeah, but we don't know for sure. A fact like this doesn't take place unless someone can attest to it. You can't just say, well, if he was alive, he probably would have gotten in touch with his wife. We know they got along, and you have to know he's dead. Okay. So, of course, if someone comes to say, I saw him dead, you can ask him, when did you see it? How did you see it? Where were you? Right? What were the circumstances? Why do we have to ask all these questions?
Because you could still be married.
Right? For the purpose of hazama. Right? Here's the rule, Chevra. Testimony cannot be accepted in court unless...
it's subject to hazama.
It is subject to... being contradicted and turned back. Not just contradicted. Contradicted means two witnesses saw this man kill, Reuven kill Shimon on Monday. And then two other witnesses say, that can't be, because we saw Shimon on Tuesday, the next day. So how could you have killed him on Monday if we saw him the next day? That's called Edei Hakhasha. Why should we trust these two witnesses more than those two witnesses? Rather, the Gemara Makkah says that Edei Hazama means that these two new witnesses are not testifying to the facts of the case. They're testifying to the unreliability of the witnesses. The original two witnesses become the object of a new court case. Following? Okay. So in order to be worthy for Torah's Hazama, so you hear of Bedikos and Chakiros in the fourth parak in Maseches Sanhedrin. Bedikos are seven questions that you have to ask every single person who ever shows up to give testimony. Mostly based on time and place. Because if they identify and they ascertain a time and a place, then they become subject, as Howard just said, to hazama. You couldn't have seen that at that time, at that place, because you were with us in a different place at that time. Okay? So you have to be precise about where and when this took place. In addition, there's something called chakiros. Chakiros would be, what color shirt was he wearing when you saw him kill the other person, right? Did he pay in gold pieces or silver pieces, right? Did he kill him with a sword or a spear, right? Was it a fig tree that he was sitting under, or was it an olive tree that he was sitting under when the person came by the bull came by and gored him, right? Those are chakiros. Right. Bedikos are the case hinges on bedikos. Chakiros, sometimes the witness weren't careful to recognize what color shirt he was wearing. But testimony cannot be given if you can't give a time and place. Because then if you can't give a time and place, then it's not subject to hazama. You following? So here's the question in number one. Are women subject to hazama in Edus Isha? What a typical Minchas Chinuch question to ask. Right?
But, I mean, how would you affect the punishment for Azama?
Well, the woman comes into court and says, I saw that this woman's husband died. I saw the lion rip his head off. And they said, really? Oh my goodness, where did that happen? And she says, she tells the place, when, and she tells the time. And then two other witnesses unequivocally say she was in a far away in another country at that time and place.
What punishment would she get?
Vasisa lokasher
zamam. Right, but what? So when she gets, so her husband is declared legally dead?
No. That's what's coming up soon. Then we did the beginning of Makos, is that when you can't do something like that, you should just get Smalkos. Right? If two witnesses say, we saw that this Kohen's mother, we know this Kohen's mother was a divorcee when she married this man's father, so this man is no longer a Kohen. Now, that causes this man significant loss, right? It just cost him 24 gifts. He can't get Chal anymore, he can't get Truma anymore, he can't get Reishis Hageiz, he can't get Zerol Chayayim, he can't get Chazeb Shok, he can't get all these kind of Pidgin Aben, Pidgin Bachor, right? He's out so many gifts. Right? They were about to cause him great monetary loss, not to mention the cover of getting first Aliyah all the time and getting up there to Duchen. Right? Then we find out that those two witnesses were disqualified with Taurus Hazama. Now what are we going to do? We're going to make them to be Ben Grusha and Ben Chalutza? No, they just get Malkus, says the Gemara. Okay, so let that be the question, Howard.
Is the acceptance of the single woman deraisa or drabana?
It would appear to be a takana de midrabana. In fact, that's the Rambam's formulation. Allow me to explain. It uses a few different svaras simultaneously. One, a person generally does not lie when, in order to be proven a liar, something beyond that person's control can take place, which is, a person's not going to say this woman's husband is dead, if all that has to be done for him to be proven a liar is for the husband to come back, to return. In other words, this person knows that the husband doesn't know that the husband is dead.
Right.
He's just saying it to, cut her some slack. Or maybe he wants to marry her. Gemara has a discussion whether one of the witnesses or the lone witness who says that this woman's husband died is allowed to marry her afterwards. Right? Or whether one of the rabbis based in the baguette can marry her. The answer is yes in both cases. But be that as it may, the question here is that if the woman enough part of within the parsha of Edus to which she is normally exempt. So the rabbis made certain takanas. One is that there's a chazaka. Believe her, because she would never make up such a story. Two, there's reglayim ledavar. You know what that means? There's circumstantial evidence that it's true, which is what? The husband's missing? Where is he? Right? The Gemara, at the end of Yevamos, does differentiate between a couple that was always fighting, and everyone in the city knew he hated her guts, right? But couldn't afford to divorce her because her ksuva was too expensive. So such a man might just, disappear. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But if there's shalom b'neihem, then there's more of a, there's like a chazaka that he doesn't just disappear. And if he disappeared, and one witness says, I saw him dead, there's good reason to believe that. Plus, as the Rambam says, it's called takonas igun. Right? So putting all that together, that sounds like a takana.
Well, if you say it's Durbanan, then why do we assume that the Durbanan incorporated all of the other rules of Eidus, like the need for a Zama?
Yeah, that's it. He moves in that direction, but the Chinuch actually sides in the other direction. And in order to shed light on this idea of the Minchas Chinuch, allow me to compare women and Eidus to another element of women and Minyan. Okay? We said last time that women are exempt from Eidus because when you see testimony, you're obligated to give it. So the exemption of women upon that obligation is within the same framework as the exemption of women in time-bound mitzvahs. The exemption of women for kabeid, of kabeidus havicha vesimecha, which is to dress the parents, to clothe the parents, to take them out, to take them in, to shop for them, to give them food. She's exempt from that because, as the Sefra says, reshus acherim aleha. She's got too many other obligations. Her brother is more capable of dropping what he's doing at any moment in order to do those things. But she's not. Okay? Of course, every situation has to be taken under its own merits. But this is the generality. Okay? So here's the question. There are the things that need minyan, like Kedusha, Kaddish, Kriyas HaTorah, saying Haftorah with Brachas, Duchening. Right? What do all these things have in common? They need a minyan. How do we know they need a minyan? Because these things, Baruch Hu, right? These things are called Davar Shebi Kedusha. And the Torah says, V'nikdashti besoch b'nei Yisrael. I will be sanctified in the midst of b'nei Yisrael. And the Gemara Darshins and Sanhedrin and Brachas Megillah, that such a configuration is 10 men. V'nikdashti besoch b'nei Yisrael means I will be sanctified in the midst of 10 men. Why not 10 women? What's the lomdus? Why not 5 men and 5 women? Where does it say v'nikdashti besoch anoshim mibnei Yisrael? So the simple answer to this, please remember this, the simple answer that you can articulate is that all the mitzvahs I just mentioned that need minyan, right, women are exempt. They're time-bound.
Is that so clear with tefillah?
Tefillah doesn't need a minyan. Tefillah is, even according to the Rambam, the Oraisa, certainly doesn't.
Right. No, you're right.
Because there's a Shatz needs a minyan. Those are all Drabbanans. Kedusha needs a minyan. Kriyas HaTorah, these are all Drabbanans. What is the Torah law of Inikdashti B'Sof Bnei Yisrael, which is ironic? Torah law is to die al Kiddush Hashem in front of Faresi, B'Sof Bnei Yisrael. To make a Kiddush Hashem and not to make a Chil, right? Not to make Chil Hashem is negative law. So of course women are obligated on the Lo Saseh. But the mitzvah Saseh to die in front of Bnei Yisrael, Inikdashti B'Sof Bnei Yisrael, so comes Rav Yaakov Emden, comes the Maharash Engel, and comes some other mafarshim to say that besoch b'nei Yisrael can be comprised of women too. Why can women make the minion of the Torah law of Yigdashti besoch b'nei Yisrael? What's the lomdus?
It's not a mitzvah shes bangram.
It's not time bound, and therefore women are also chayav in that. Women also have to die al kiddush Hashem. Someone takes a gun to a man's head and says, worship that idol or I'll kill you. So he's supposed to rather die. It's a woman. It's a halacha for a woman too. You know the story with Chana and her seven sons, right? So a woman also is in the parish of Kiddush Hashem. So a woman makes up the minion of Kiddush Hashem. I can give you two other examples like this. One, halacha in Shulchan Aruch says that a menorah should be lit publicly in shul on Hanukkah. It's a din in the tzibur. Although no one is fulfilling their obligation on that, unless that's your home, right? But otherwise, the only reason to light the menorah, which is a very powerful minhag, everybody does it, the reason to light the menorah in shul is a din in the tzibur. So comes the Shulchan Aruch to say that that should only be done in front of a minion. Or at least a minion that's coming, that's about to show up. It has to be part of a tzibur. So you can anticipate the question I'm going to ask right now, right?
But yeah, it should be mixed, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Can women make up that minion? There are five men and five women in shul. Can you light the menorah?
Yeah, it should.
Stami, yeah. The third example that I think I can give is that at the end of the Mikra Megillah, right, there's a bracha to be made at night. Haravas Rivenu Adonis Dinenu, right?
Right.
That bracha is only made in front of a minion. If you don't have a minion, you skip it. Same question, right?
Right.
Can women make up that minion in order to say Haravas Rivenu Adonis Dinenu? And the answer again will be yes, according to these commentaries who say that women make up the minion for Kiddush Hashem. You agree?
Yeah.
Right?
Rabbi?
Yes?
Is the minion for Birkat HaMazon time-bound?
Because women amazing. Are... That's the very next words about to come out of my mouth. Because that's what the Menchas Chinuch does in the mitzvah of benching. He asks the following question. Mamash, I was just going there. Okay, Birkas HaMazon is a Mishnah in Brachas and Daf Chav is not a time-bound mitzvah, and women are obligated, of course, therefore. The other side of this is as follows. You know that at benching, when you have three men, they're supposed to say, Rabbi Sayin Barach, Yishem Hashem Barach, right? Seventh Perek in Brachas discusses how we derive these things. And the Gemara says that if three women are eating together, they should also say, right? Let's say chaverai never, whatever they say, but they should also invite each other. Let's say grace. Let's thank God, right? Tosfos asks why that practice has fallen out, but there's some places that are bringing it back. What you shouldn't have is a combination of two men and one woman or two women and one man in order to make that mezuman. Got it? So, question that the Minchas Chinuch asks in the mitzvah of benching, and I'm going to apply it to us, is if you have 10 women, can anyone anticipate the question? Since women are obligated to bench, yeah?
To tell a Canaan.
Do 10 women say in the Berech Elokeinu Shachal Mishalo? It's not the Minchas Chinuch who asks this question. It's Tosfos who asks this question. It's the Minchas Chinuch who cites this Tosfos to disagree with everything I just said. And he is l'shitaso here by saying that Torah's Hazama never applies to women. Because when we accept their Eidus, it's not the Torah's, the full din of Eidus, that is subject to Hazama. It's just a chiddush that in some cases we have relaxed the rigors of the process of accepting testimony for a certain takana or the like. Here is Tosfos' answer. Tosfos says that when 10 women or 100 women or 1,000 women bench mezumen, they do not say, Nevarech Elokeinu Shachal Mishalo, Here's Tosfos's like sort of widespread answer, because women never comprise a minyan. So the Minchas Chinuch, therefore,
what ever?
He says never. It says,
what about
no case.
What about the Chanukiah?
So he says that no, you need 10 men to say that, to light the menorah in Shul.
And the Kiddush Hashem, Barabim, he would say even then they don't make up the minyan.
Yeah, he says it there too. That's he writes about this in the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem in Parshas Kadosh, in Parshas it's in Parshas Emor, I think.
What's the logic of that? If they have the same chiyuv,
then just never make a minyan. Chiyuv, they don't make a minyan. It you know, I like the other approach because it stays congruent.
Mm-hmm.
I understand women are exempt from kiddush, from kedusha, from kaddish, so they don't make up the minyan necessary for those things. But then let's be fair. Let's be consistent. When they are obligated in that thing, let them make up the minyan. Anyway, that's the sheet of the Minchas Chinuch. That's number one. Women are not subject to Torah's Hazama. Number two, there's an additional chiddush regarding Tziruf Edus based on Al Pishnayim Edim O Al Pishlosha Edim Yumas Hames. A person shall be put to death on the strength of the testimony of two or three witnesses. The question should be obvious. Yes?
Did you? This really count.
Why two or three?
Why would you need to say three? Kal v'chomer, if two are good, three are good.
Right. If two are good, kal v'chomer, three is good. Now, you may know that there are a few Tosfos all over Shas that collect these kind of examples, right? The Mishnah in Shabbos says, on Shabbos, you can move four or five boxes around to make room for your guests. What? What do you mean four or five boxes? Say, you can move up to five boxes. What do you mean? You know, a boy of six or seven should start to learn. So in that case, the Gemara says, well, which is it, six or seven? So the Gemara says, okay, if he's healthy, it's six. If he's still a little weaker, wait till he's seven. Right? Or Rabbi Yehuda who says, a sukkah is not limited to 20 amos. A sukkah can be as high as 40 or 50 amos. I mean, just say as high as 50 amos. Does he mean 40 or 50 just to be exaggerative, and even 100 amos sukkah is okay? Maybe. All of these are brought together by Tosfos in various places. Some of the Gemara notices it, and some of the Gemara ignores it. Tosfos tries to create a klal of when it's to be noticed and when not, to say that the thing should happen on the basis of two or three witnesses, right? There are different opinions in Chazal for what this means. And Rashi in his Perush to the Pasuk in Devarim brings down all of the Perushim. Some are agadic, some are halachic. So the one that the Chinuch discusses here is called Tseruf. Right? What do we mean? Two witnesses testify to something, and then one of them is found to be disqualified. Obviously, the whole testimony is thrown out, right? Why was he disqualified? Because you just found out that one of them is an incessant gambler. One of them is related to the person they're testifying about. Right? So that person should never have been accepted in the first place. We don't have two witnesses. We just have one. But if three witnesses come in and one is considered to be puzzled or disqualified, isn't it possible that we still have some remaining testimony here? Right?
Well, don't we regard it as a a group action?
So that's the question this Gemara asks. Okay. So it's an afkamina of why did you say two or three? And here is what the Chinuch discusses, is that it's something called Torah, regarding Torah's Hazama, that the discussion here is in Tziruf. Right? The Tziruf is that when we take testimony about a woman who can remarry, is there no difference between two witnesses and one witness for her to be able to remarry? And the answer is that there is a difference. Two witnesses will create what's called a Maisa Beis Din that gives her an official letter of permission to remarry, right? There will be differences regarding her atonement if the husband is found to have been alive all that time, right? And there's a question here, but what if the two witnesses who came in are a man and a woman? Right? Of course we'll accept such testimony. We'll accept the testimony of the woman alone that the other woman can remarry. Right? So this is just another proof that the Minchas Chinuch brings, along with his Shita, his opinion just referenced above, right? That a woman, even if she can join with someone else in testimony, she cannot be subject to Hazama. A woman is never mitzterefes to Hazama. Okay, you're following that if she is found, I mean, look, you can say that, okay, she has a so you see the strategy here now, right? If someone wants to make up a story to allow a potential aguna to remarry, better do it with a woman than a man, according to the Chinuch, right? Because the man is subject to Hazama, the woman isn't. You get it? According to the Chinuch. Okay.
Does the finding that the husband, that she can remarry, have ramifications for, like, the children inheriting the property of the father? Or is it limited just to her right to remarry? Like, they now own title to his property.
Excellent question. The answer is no. For that, you need Choshen Mishpat with testimony. Because that does not have these three umdanas. There is raglayim ledavar. A man doesn't disappear on his wife nor on his children, right? But I don't have takana sigun. I want to make sure everyone understands Howard's question. If a man is married and he has yorshim, he has heirs, and this less than normal testimony, one witness or whatever it is, a woman, a pasul, a gambler, and they come in and they say, we saw this man have his head ripped off by a lion in the arena, and we would like to, you know, just publicly, just, you know, say it for the record so that this man's wife can remarry. Right. So that man also has heirs. So it's sort of like Palginon Dibura.
Yeah.
Right. Fact is that the Psak allows the kids to sit Shiva. The wife is gonna sit Shiva if she's gonna remarry. Right? And yet, the tzakana of allowing such flimsy testimony does not extend to Choshen Mishpat, to the laws of inheritance. It only extends to the laws of aguna. Okay. Number four, a very long section, the Minchas Chinuch discusses the parameters of the psulim. Okay, the question is what creates a heretic whose testimony is questionable, and what essentially makes someone's testimony questionable? In general, Chinuch points out that the Talmud does not like to trust people who can be bought. You know what I'm saying? When someone violates the laws of Shemitah, right, to hoard Shemitah products, to hold on to them beyond the date when they're not supposed to, right, and to go into people's properties and take their fruits and then go and then turn it around and sell them. If someone is so ready to violate the Torah for monetary gain, then that makes that person pasul edus because that person can be bought. We don't want someone giving testimony who can be easily be bought. Okay. So he discusses these parameters. Okay. Number five has a chiddush of Hazama. I'm not skipping this whole area of psulim. Okay. Number five is the chiddush of Hazama because it's different than all punishments in the Torah. Can you figure it out? How is Edim Zomimim different from all, every single punishment in the Torah has this, but Edim Zomimim doesn't? Sort of a trick question. The answer is a warning. A warning. There's no such thing as a punishment in the Torah. In onshin elim kein mazhirin. No punishment without a warning. In order to get malchus for eating treif, someone has to tell you, are you aware that you're eating something that's not kosher? Absolutely. Are you aware that the Torah prohibits what you're eating? 100%. Are you aware that the Torah has a punishment for your what you're eating? Yes, 100%. Are you aware that the punishment is, and then tell the punishment. Malchus, if it's pork, it's misa bidei shemayim, if it's truma, it could be chametz on Pesach, it could be kares, right? Are you aware of these punishments? That's why I'm eating it. Okay, now this person can get malchus. But short of saying everything I just described, this person would not get malchus. Okay. This is true about all mitzvahs except Edim Zomim. But it's sort of a trick question. Because in essence, the Edim Zomim also get a warning. Because they are, at the core, Edim. And whenever you serve in court, whenever you testify in court, the judges are going to interview you and they're going to tell you the severity of lying in court and how important it is that you just tell the facts and nothing but the facts. Okay? Because all witnesses receive some kind of hasra when they step on the stand. Right? Okay. Number six are cases. There are four such cases in the beginning of Makkos, Maseches Makkos. Four cases where Edim Zomimim cannot be given the Torah's Hazama, so instead we give them Makkos. I mentioned one before. If two witnesses say this man's mother was a grusha, was divorcee when she married this man's father, so he's not a Kohen. Right? Even if the two witnesses saying that were Kohanim, they would not lose their kahuna. Right? The Gemara learns this from the Xeris HaKasu, from the way the Pasuk appears. Okay. Two witnesses said this man killed someone inadvertently. So the punishment is this man has to go to a city of refuge. And then it's found that these two witnesses are Zomamim. No, we don't make the two of them go to a city of refuge. Right? That two is derived from Zeres HaKosev. Instead, what do? We give them Malkus. Okay? Because in addition to whatever Eidim Zomamim are, they're violating the mitzvah, Mikvah Sheker Tirchak. Right. Now, in most of the Mefarshim, this mitzvah of Midvar Sheker Tirchak is actually limited to a Beis Din. It's pretty significant because I might have thought that Midvar Sheker Tirchak applies everywhere. Right? Even outside of court. How about Lot Tishakru in Parshas Kedoshim? And yet, all of the Mone mitzvahs, the people who count the 613 mitzvahs, all of the codes, and they do not count a single regular mitzvah, you shall not lie. Because there is no such mitzvah. Okay, of course, the Torah wants us to tell the truth. Of course, truth is a high ideal. But it's not a categorical mitzvah. Because there are some cases where we're allowed to lie, or some cases where we have to lie, if it means saving a life. Okay? So we don't have a categorical imperative like Immanuel Kant, right? It tells us if something is wrong at any time, it's always wrong. No, they're black and white issues. Sometimes you have to lie to save someone's life or reputation, and you're allowed to.
There's a more moderate view of Kant that takes that in consideration.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Number 8, the Minchas Chinuch, this is now on page Reish Aleph, asks the question of Bizbuz Mamon, which often happens on some juries, especially if the mafia gets to them, right? It's not a question, of course, it's corrupt if a juror accepts $20,000 to vote in a certain direction. Here's the thing. The mafia comes up to one of the witnesses and says, I'm going to kill you if you testify here. So the question is Eidus nidche mipikuach nefesh? So the Minchas Chinuch argues, yes, it is. The Eidim should recuse themselves if they're really scared of being killed. Right? Masha'en came, the judge. The Sifrei says on the Pasuk, Lo Saguru Mipnei Ish. Do not hide what you feel is the Gmar Din if someone's threatening you. The judge has to act in a higher degree of integrity to make sure that the court case goes accordingly. Right? Okay, the judge has to be treated to a higher degree. Gemar Bava Basra says that any person who ever had money extracted from him in a court case can no longer be a judge. Huh, wow. What if he felt he was right? Then you probably shouldn't have had money taken from you. Well, I'll leave that alone for now, but this is an interesting thing in number 8. Witnesses who are mamash afraid for their lives, afraid of bodily harm, if they give their testimony, should recuse themselves. Or not they should, but they can recuse themselves, as opposed to the judge that he can't. He's in the higher madrega. Okay.
Rabbi?
Yes, John?
Perhaps because we're always supposed to seek a deal before the judgment. Maybe that's what part of why anyone who's had money taken from him in court.
Hmm. Right. You had to feel this eventuality. So you should have offered some kind of a compromise. It's known in the halacha as bitua. Bitua.
It's compromise. That wouldn't work in a criminal case, would it?
No, of course. Okay. All right. So the question number 9 asks, is there any type of robber that might be forbidden in the case of aguna? Can he be bought? Maybe some family member of hers paid him $1,000 to come in and lie about it. Finally, number 10, he discusses one other area of halacha where we allow one witness. It's the edus of sota. It's machlokes which one, but edus of sota. He says, don't be seen behind closed doors with that man. And lo and behold, one witness saw her go into a room in seclusion with this man. Huh. After your husband warned you already. Okay. So the Minchas Chinuch just discusses the parameters of that one singular edus regarding Hazama and everything else we said before about women. Okay. But it's another area, and there's still even a third, also in the Sechas Sota. If a man dies between two towns, the two towns have to measure which one is closer, and they have to do something called Egla Rufa, right? But we don't do Egla Rufa if even one witness comes forth and says, I know what happened to this man. I know how he got here. Then you wouldn't do the whole ritual. It has to be that they know nothing of how this man got there. Okay, Chevra, that's 10 o'clock. I am going next week to go to a very exciting mitzvah, which is Lo Tachmod. Okay, it's a very exciting mitzvah about what the parameters of coveting might be. Okay, have a great week, everybody.